UN says gunmen kill 30 in Darfur. New Jack the Ripper, serial killer, murders five women in UK. Car bombings in Baghdad kill 15 in crowded Shiite area markets. Children gunned down in Gaza Strip. Man kills five, then himself, in Missouri spree. 3,000 ethnic Tamils flee Sri Lanka to escape fighting. Truck bomb kills 70 Iraqis as the poor gather for jobs. Woman, 65, shot and killed in Bronx. Those are captions, most of them from the New York Times, all of them since last we gathered together, all of them in the past 7 days. Does it even shock us anymore? Good. Good. It does shock us. I hope it shocks us. I hope we never come to the place where we say, oh, well, that's life. That's the world we live in now. I pray to God it shocks the living daylights out of us. I hope it scares us. I hope it upsets us. I hope it angers us. If we ever get to the point where it doesn't, we better start looking around for that handbasket that we're all sitting in, because we're in trouble. I've heard people say that we don't need God. This whole light coming into the world, Jesus being the light of the world thing, is hogwash, because we don't need the light. We don't need saving. There's nothing wrong with us. Woman, 65, shot and killed in Bronx. Children, gunned down in Gaza Strip. There is something very, very wrong with us. We need God's light. Of all the kinds of darkness in the world, and there are many, no darkness scares me more, no darkness angers me more, no darkness hurts me more than the darkness of the violence that we are capable of against one another. We've been talking about Christ being the light in the midst of the world's darkness, and we talked so far about two kinds of darkness. The first, darkness that we can't control, and how frustrating that is. Natural disaster, illnesses, sicknesses that have no cures. We feel so powerless in the face of that darkness, and that Christ is the light of healing and of presence. And then we talked about the kind of darkness that we can and must struggle against, the darkness of oppression, the systemic darkness that human institutions have created throughout the course of time, and that Christ is the light of liberation, of freedom to those who are oppressed. The darkness of human violence against each other is a combination, I think, of those two. On the one hand, it is a darkness that we've created. Like the systemic darkness, like oppression, it's something we do. On the other hand, it seems to be completely out of our control. We have gotten completely out of control when it comes to the violence that individuals can inflict and groups can inflict on one another. When we strap bombs to our children and send them into crowded areas, when we pack vehicles filled with explosives and drive them into cafes, when we load guns and walk into schools, nothing in the world shows our need for God's love and God's light more than that. To loosely and poorly paraphrase Paul, though, where there is great sin, there is great grace. Or to put it in the language that we've been using in Advent, where there is great darkness, there is the promise of great light. And so while there is nothing more ugly, more terrifying, more hurtful and frightening and destructive than the violence we inflict upon each other, there is no promise of God's more beautiful than the promise of peace. Because we're not talking about how we might think of peace. We're not talking about just laying down weapons, or even as Isaiah envisions, turning those weapons into something else. We are not talking about war stopping. That's not God's peace. God's peace is deeper than that. God's peace is, the Hebrew word is shalom, which encompasses a much greater thing than just like the absence of conflict. It is peace with the presence of justice, of well-being, of healing. If the darkness of violence, right, is the combination of darkness, which violence is oppression, is sickness. It is a sickness, isn't it, violence? And combined with the darkness that we create, oppression, and violence is oppression as well, then the light of peace is the combination of the light of healing and the light of liberation. It's not enough to just stop. God's peace, God's shalom, is justice and freedom and liberation. It is healing and well-being and presence with one another. It is the combination of the two kinds of light we've already talked about coming into the world. And there are examples. As strange and weird as that seems, because the darkness is so great that sometimes we gotta look really hard for them. But there are these little pinpricks of light that shine in the darkness, little instances of people carrying the light of God's peace into the world. We can all think of the really obvious ones, you know, like Mother Teresa and the light of love and compassion, or we can think of Martin Luther King Jr. and his absolute refusal to act with violence, even when violence was inflicted upon him. We can think of Gandhi and who Martin Luther King read and studied, and his refusal to be violent and to say, no, God, however we understand God, is a God of peace, is a God of love. But there are other examples. I think of a picture I saw in the newspaper about a week or so after the terrorist attacks in New York City. And it was a really depressing time. And one of those times when the darkness was so great that it was hard to see any light. And the captions on the front were all more captions like I read, captions about death and violence there and elsewhere. And all the pictures were those images that we became saturated with. And about halfway back in the paper, on a relatively unread page, there was a picture of a Palestinian Muslim woman giving blood to send to New York City. There's a light shining in the darkness. I don't even know if that woman's name was in the caption. I don't think so. But there was a light shining in the darkness. Or we remember more recently this past year, after the school shooting in the Amish community in Pennsylvania, that at the memorial service for the victims, the families of the victims invited the family of the shooter to come, because he was a victim too. He was a victim of his own violence as well, to come and to be present with them as they mourn together. What forgiveness is that? What a light that shines in the darkness. We never saw their faces. We never learned their names. They never were put on the front page of the paper because they didn't want to be. What a light that shines in the darkness. Or even when we see kind of the more obvious people whose faces and names we do know, actors and celebrities who go and stand as a voice for activism and say, we have to do something about the bloodshed in Darfur. We cannot let this happen again. We cannot let what happened in Rwanda happen here, and it is happening here. So folks like George Clooney, for example, go and stand up, take action, and make a plea for peace. Just as the darkness is a combination of the darkness of oppression and the darkness of sickness, and just as God's light is a combination of the light of healing and the light of liberation, what we do is a combination of what we've talked about. How do we bring the light to those places where folks are sick or suffering and we can do nothing to change that? We brought the light of prayer and of presence. And where folks are oppressed and suffering economic and social and political injustice, we bring the light through our speaking on behalf of them and through our activism. Here too we combine. In the presence of the darkness of violence, human violence against one another, we bring both as in bringing the light of peace. We bring prayer and presence always. And we bring justice and activism. It starts in our own selves, in our own hearts. The difficult thing about this is that it starts so small. Those little lights shining in the darkness, those women that gave blood, those members of the Amish community that invited their children's killer's family to come to the memorial service, they did that because of the light in their heart. They did that because of the faith in their hearts. It starts so small. It starts inside with a light heart, a heart filled with God's light. And it starts with the actions that Christ talks about throughout the Gospels. He gives example after example of what it means to live in the assumption of God's shalom, God's peace, of what it means to be light at heart, to have the light of God at heart, to love our enemies. That is a personal discipline, not even choice, it's a discipline to love our enemies, to turn the other cheek, as the Amish community did, to forgive the blow against them and to turn again, to pray not only for ourselves and our loved ones, but for those who persecute us and others. And those actions keep that faith alive. When I read headlines like that, when I look around and see stuff like that happen, and I don't know why or how. You know, we never know what happened to someone or some group of someone's to make that happen. Was it years of persecution and oppressive rule that makes a person decide, yeah, the only option left is a suicide mission? Is it that something just snaps in the brain that makes a person a serial killer or a school shooter? What happens? We don't know where it comes from. That's what I mean when I say it shocks me. And we don't know how to stop it from happening. We don't know where it comes from. And it is depressing. When I read headlines like that, it shocks me and it depresses me and it terrifies me and it angers me. And it's so hard to keep that faith in God's peace alive when you read stuff like that. You think, man, could you just show us a sign, God, that we're getting better? Can we just move in a direction here? And it seems that we take a step forward and we take a step back and we resolve a conflict in one part of the world and something breaks out somewhere else. And we find one serial killer and another one starts in another part of the country or part of the world, and it seems like there is no hope. I think it takes the greatest faith then to see it. Faith in the things for which we have no evidence. Hope in things unseen, as Hebrews says. No matter how dark the days get, no matter how dark the violence is, to hold on to that promise, the promise that is made over and over and over again in Scripture, that what the Messiah is the light of peace, and that what the reign of God is the reign of God's shalom. It's not, you know, like a cloudy city with people wearing robes and halos and that's all. What the reign of God looks like is people living in true peace with one another. People living not just without bloodshed, people living in well-being and justice with one another. That is the promise. That is the vision of God's reign. That is the light in which we have faith, and it is the most improbable, if not impossible, promise we get. We have no evidence to support that it's going to happen. We have only the promise that it is God's vision and that with God, all things are possible. Even those, especially those, that seem least possible. What a depressing thing to talk about at Christmas time, Pastor. What are you thinking? That's what my mother-in-law said to me last night when I told her what I was preaching about, too. It's Christmas! What are you talking about? It's not Christmas yet, it's Advent. What are you talking about this depressing stuff for? This is the world that Christ came to save. This is it. This is where Christ was born. I mean, you think that we're a violent society now? They were a violent society then. It hasn't gotten any worse, I don't think, and I don't know if it's gotten better. But it hasn't gotten worse. First century Judea was not a peaceful society. People slaughtered one another. People killed one another. People were violent against one another. If they'd had newspapers, as the New York Times was reporting, the headlines would look a lot like that. And that's the world that the Christ child is born into. That's what Jesus came to save. That's the darkness where he offered himself as the light. And in that deepest darkness, the light shines the brightest. So that Christmas light that we talk about coming into the world is the greatest promise that we can imagine. The light of peace, the light of hope and faith in the midst of that deepest darkness. This is the world that Christ comes into, not just in the first century, but again and again in our lives. What God would choose such a thing? What God would care about people that can do such horrible things? Our God. Our God. Amen.